just listening to the other speakers so far, in particular to Craig's description of the court process, quite honestly reminds me of the farcical legal processes that we used to endure under apartheid, where you had this impression sitting in a court of law that this was all theater that was being enacted to try and give the impression of due legal process, where it has already been decided that there shall be no due legal process. And it really concerns me that this is happening in the United Kingdom of today. But I suppose taking the sort of context that Chris Williamson has outlined, we shouldn't be surprised. And why do I say that? Well, I know most of you who are on this call will realize this, but perhaps to some of you coming to this issue more recently, let us just reiterate what Julian Assange is being persecuted for. He's being persecuted for revealing the crimes of the US government and its allies, primarily the US's biggest poodle when it comes to military matters, the United Kingdom. He is being prosecuted for speaking truth to power. And if we are not able to stop this corrupt and illegal process that is currently carrying on, we would not just have failed an individual in Julian. We would have failed the task of truth-telling, the task of journalism, the task of holding power to account. We will also have abandoned the right of every citizen to know what our government is doing in our name and with our money. We should also bear in mind that what Julian has done is he has violated the sanctified code of the national security state. And what do I mean by that? Everything that happens in the domain of national security is hidden behind a veil of national security imposed secrecy. So we look at the specific crimes that Julian and WikiLeaks have revealed, but we remind ourselves that every day similar crimes are happening using primarily American and British weapons to murder innocent civilians in Yemen. As Chris Hedges, the former New York Times war correspondent who was fired for publicly opposing the invasion of Iraq, has said, if citizens were actually shown the true images of the conflicts that we are engaged in, the conflicts that we are providing the weapons and the financing for, if we could see those real images, if we could read the real reports of what was happening in those wars, we as citizens would not allow this to happen in our name. So what Julian and WikiLeaks have done is to bypass that sanctity of national security imposed secrecy and to reveal to us citizens what is really being done in our name. And I should just mention, based on my research over the past 20 years, that it is not just the murder and mayhem of war-making that is being hidden from us here. It is worth bearing in mind that the global trade in weapons accounts for 40% of all corruption in all world trade. And who benefits from that corruption? Corruption that, for instance, saw the United Kingdom pay members of the Saudi royal family, the son of Margaret Thatcher, Mark Thatcher, and numerous intermediaries, £6 billion in bribes. Who benefits from these bribes? It is politicians, corporate executives, and intermediaries such as arms dealers, banks, auditors, consultants, and lawyers. They make fortunes out of the arms trade and out of our war making. And it is this bribery and corruption that oils the wheels of our corrupted political processes. When one considers the nature of the power of the national security state, one can feel extremely daunted. When one hears the accounts of what is happening in court when Julian appears, one can feel incredibly depressed and powerless. It's a feeling that many people in South Africa grew up with during the worst years of apartheid. And some of us think that as we got towards 1994, when apartheid finally came to an end, that the 10 years previously were probably a time in which we saw a loosening of this, what was effectively an authoritarian, reactionary, racist oligarchy. But in fact, it was the years leading up to the end of apartheid that were amongst the worst to endure for the majority of South Africans. Because as the apartheid state claimed that it was starting a process of reform, in the African townships of the country, it imposed even worse repression than had been seen historically. But it never resulted in people on the ground in South Africa and in the international anti-apartheid movement losing hope. At a slightly anecdotal and personal level, I was forced to leave South Africa in the mid-1980s because I'd become involved with the then banned ANC from my late teens, and I was due to be called up for service in the apartheid military. I was taken out of the country, very fortunately. And the night before I was leaving the country at very short notice, I remember sitting above the city of Cape Town, my hometown, and what I, in a probably prejudiced way, regard as one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And I remember thinking to myself that I will never again in my lifetime see this city. Because if anybody had told me in 1986 that 4 years later, the ANC would be unbanned, Nelson Mandela would be released from prison, and 4 years after that, Mandela would actually be elected as a democratically elected president of South Africa, I would have seriously questioned their mental health at the time. But the reality is that that is what happened. And it happened as a consequence of an extraordinary international anti-apartheid campaign, and the vast majority of South Africans making their own country ungovernable for the authoritarian regime that tried to rule over them. And it's at times like these, when things feel as bleak as they do today in global politics, in the case of Julian Assange, in the really pathetic role that our mainstream media is playing in propping up the status quo, that we should remember these experiences of hope, these experiences of triumph. For if we allow the national security state to continue to do as it pleases, we, all of humanity, will enable the political and economic elite to destroy our planet, to make us far less safe, and to make our world far less democratic. So for all of us who've joined this call, there are crucial things that we can do. We can spread information to as many people as we can about what Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have actually done, which has been a remarkable service to humanity. We can spread information about the nature of the court case and about why Britain is kowtowing to the needs of America in this particular case, because that is the most powerful thing we have, is the power of information. And it is up to all of us who've been a part of this call to spread that information as widely as we possibly can, so that we can ultimately free Julian Assange free the truth and free ourselves from the national security state. Thank you very much.